Hey, my name is Walt, and I learned today that I am the fake Mike Lafferty. Mike apologizes. He's not going to be joining us straight away, but will probably come in somewhere just north of the middle. Today we are with a very esteemed and wound-up roundtable who have come out today to talk about the weirdest goddamn thing you've read in comics. Just the title alone should know that this one you need either coffee, beer, or a combination of the two. Today, starting from my left going to the right, we're going with Mr. Aid Smith of Mesozoic Press. How are you, sir?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
And next up, the only mad Canadian I know, Mr. Andrew Colas.
I'm not mad, I just calls it how I sees it.
Which we love. Finally, in the lineup, we have esteemed award-winning writer and a master of Canadian studies, Mr. Chris McLaughlin.
Good to be here, sir.
So to kick things off, and without the usual wit and charm of Mike Lafferty to keep things light and lively, I'm going to fake my way through it because everybody knows that while I am not overtly angry, I like to deal with my fists more than my mouth. What do you guys consider a weird comic? Like, what to you is a weird comic?
Well, I guess I'll go first.
Okay, Matt, Chris.
Okay, please go ahead. Please.
Oh no, we were calling attention to you. See, it's already weird.
Yeah, go, Chris, go. Okay.
Well, for me, there's a difference between a weird comic and a bad comic. You know, a bad comic makes you sorry that you bought it. It makes you feel like you wasted your money. Makes you even feel bad about trying to resell it or give it to the first, you know, decent-looking child that you see. That's a whole different thing. Weird is just where you're sort of questioning, you know, where was the editor on this one? You know, you're just sitting there questioning that, wow, somebody thought of this. Somebody didn't talk themselves out of it. Their friends and family didn't point out, do you really want to attach your name to this? And an editor who was apparently crunked at the time just let that thing slide on by. And you just kind of wonder how this thing ever got out of the publishing house. That, to me, that's the definition of a weird comic.
And, Andrew, what do you think?
What do I think of as a weird comic? Was it Svetlana, the girl who loved the swastika, or whatever the hell that comic was called? That would be my definition of a weird comic. Just something that when I look at it, my brain goes, what in the name of God? What? How? Why? Or Youngblood? One of those two. That was how I would go with it right there.
And Aid, what do you think?
Do you know what? I honestly don't know. That anything that Grant Morrison put out for a few years would probably be defined as a weird comic. There's a few out there that you read and you just go, okay, that was kind of unusual, and you have to read it four times before you even get what the hell was kind of going on. I think any crossover you can finish and go, what was that about? That's pretty strange.
And joining us is Mr. Jason Tondreau to give his opinions on what is weird and what might or might not be Canadian.
Hey guys, did I miss AIDS? AIDS the one that I really wanted to hear.
I'm not going that far yet.
Aid is our birthday boy this week.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And since he has turned 30 and is such a young man, his whole life ahead of him, I thought that we should give him, you know, pride of place.
That's cool. I don't mind sharing. It's all good.
So, Jason, what would you consider a weird comic? So far, we've had Weird is Not Necessarily Bad, Youngblood, and then...
And Hansi, the girl who loved the swastika.
As well as any crossover you can look at, put down, and then say what just happened.
Grant Morrison's entire career, essentially.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. And the real challenge is not to just name everything Grant Morrison has ever done. first off, I have to ask, whose idea was this topic?
Me. That was me.
Okay.
Mike asked me for a list of potential topics about a year ago, and I sent him like 15, and he pulled this one out of the little topic grab bag that I sent him.
Okay, hey, good.
Real quickly, before Jason goes, add to the list of things to do with the time machine. Stop this list from happening.
Go on, please. So I thought that it was you, Chris, and that's good. I have two. I have two craziest comics ever. And you're right. They can be bad crazy or they can be good crazy. So there's a little story behind this one, but my first one is a comic from the 90s called Mogobe Desert Rats. Mogobe Desert Rats. Now, to really understand Mogobe Desert Rats, you have to understand that it came out in that era after the Ninja Turtles had kind of exploded onto the scene, and everybody were doing like these crazy radioactive mutant animal comics.
Oh, yeah.
Samurai Pizza Cats and stuff
yes.
like that. Yeah.
Now, most of those were just bizarre and awful, but it's to be fair, we have to note that that's also where we got Usagi Yojimbo, so which is genius.
Which is great, yeah.
Yeah. But one of these books was called Mogobe Desert Rats. And the Mogobe Desert Rats were, as far as I can tell, mutated rats who flew around on jetpacks in the desert and mostly fought each other and other creatures, monsters, mutants of the wasteland.
Now, I'm listening. Go on.
I did not understand a page of this book, but what was great about it was, and I was introduced to it by my roommate at the time, Jerry Grayson, who has since gone on to publish a bunch of great role-playing games. But he was also a very talented comic artist at the time. And Mogobe Desert Rats had a very specific purpose for him. It showed him that anything could be published. In other words, Jerry was a talented artist. He's very passionate about his work. He's got a beautiful style. I very much admire Jerry's work. But it's hard to get a book published, and it's lots of work. And Mogobe Desert Rats was awful. I mean, this book was just one to page 22. The story was incomprehensible. Art was bad. And whenever Jerry was low, he would pull out Mogobe Desert Rats and reread it. And he would know that there was hope. That if that book could be published, anything could be published. So I really recommend that you go, because I just pulled it up on Atomic Avenue, and it's like 59 cents for a copy of Mogobe Desert Rats. And if you are a struggling artist, you need to buy this book.
You know, Jason, you're going to love this, but my whole RPG career is that exact same story, only with a different product.
Okay, can you tell us what it was? You're a southern gentleman, and you don't want to say bad things about anybody.
It's awkward for me now, because I actually know some of the people that worked on it, and I know some of the circumstances that contributed it to being less than good. Yes. And I would hate to throw them in with it, but let's just say it's from a game that was no longer with us, and it was the most historically ignorant thing I had read other than Facebook the last 3 months. So
I'm listening. Go ahead.
So it offended me as a role player and as a social scientist, and I had this aggression will not stand, man, moment. So I immediately went over and asked Shane Hensley if he could use something from an actual historian, and God bless him, he said yes.
What game is this, man? I need to know.
It's a game that did not do American history well, and that's all I will say in public.
Fair enough.
This is why God invented email.
I fully disagree.
Since we already mentioned Grant Morrison, my favorite good weird comic is the last issue of Seven Soldiers of Victory. Now, those of you that have been reading Morrison, you know that he likes to get very meta. In particular, if you've been reading Multiversity, we got this notion of a superhero who is basically crowdsourced by trolling.
Yes.
His powers come from internet trolls who criticize the bad guy and thereby give the hero superpowers. It's just crazy. But the funny thing is that he'd already done all this. Like, the whole conceit at the end of Multiversity is really just a replay of the last issue of Seven Soldiers of Victory. When Zatanna casts the spell of Seven, to save the universe, which she can only do if you, the reader, help her do it. Like, he specifically calls out to the reader and says, I can't do this without you. Are you in? And you have to buy into it. And Morrison, you know...
takes a lot of drugs, and it always shows in his writing where on his drug binge he is.
He does.
Well, he's also Scottish, so he comes by a lot of that naturally.
Oh! Oh, you won't name a game, but you'll describe the entire Scottish people.
Scotsmen are mad. Scotsmen are mad. It's a fact. I'm Scottish.
On behalf of all my ancestors over there in the Highlands, I just say I do not know him. I do not know him at all. He walked in. He's a stranger. I won't look at him again.
When Morrison is the sad thing is that like Seven Soldiers and Multiversity are obviously just him trying to do the exact same thing again. He comes up with this incredibly great story hook. For Seven Soldiers, it was, let's have a team of seven superheroes who save the world but never meet. For Multiversity, it's, what if all the different alternate universes find out about each other by reading their own comic books? And then he has to make it fit this marketing promise. Like, he decides, well, in Seven Soldiers, it was, I'm going to rehabilitate these seven characters so that DC can publish ongoing series with them. None of which happened. For Multiversity, it was, let's create all these new alternate universes with their own characters, none of which we will ever see again, right?
Which is a shame, because his Carlton Watchmen is amazing. That little story he did where he was using the original Carlton characters as the Watchmen.
Multiverse is not going away, though, isn't it?
Well, it isn't. Yeah, you may have missed it, no. Jason, but they announced at San Diego that there's going to be further Multiversity stories.
Well, I hope that it's worth it, because the reason why my point with all this was just that I think Morrison, he's torn by these two different competing forces. On the one hand, he can just tell a really great superhero story, but he compromises that with this desire to create marketing platforms that DC can use to tell additional ongoing monthly series. And I guess I wish that he just would stop trying to do that. A man cannot serve two masters, you know? Like, just sit down and tell a great one-issue story, because you're really good at that.
Is Garth Ennis Scottish as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I think there's something to what Chris said earlier when it comes to Scottish comic book writers and superheroes. I think they're very confused by the entire concept of it. I think, and I'm not joking when I say this, I think culturally for them as Scotsmen, the way their heroic myth works, the way their heroic legend works, superheroes seem to be anathema to that. So when they write superheroes, they can't write them like superheroes. They got to write them like, I don't know, bizarre prats or something. It just always...
Well, you know, I did write Eminem Noir, so there may be something in the fact that Scottish people just don't get superheroes.
That book was great. Plenty of great superhero books. I mean, I'm teaching All-Star Superman right now. But anyway, so I will stop talking. That was my favorite good, weird book, the last issue of Seven Soldiers of Victory, which was probably got extra bonus stars because it had Satana and Fitness.
So keeping it on that side of the pond, Aide... Do you have favorite weird comics? What tops your weird pile?
Oh dear, I remember back in the day. Again, Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol was always a bit. Well, hey, what the hell was that about? Well, I bloody loved it. I absolutely adored Doom Patrol. Yeah, exactly, Danny the Street. I mean, that's just classics. What the hell? Fantastic stuff. Anything Vertigo were putting out at the time, I pretty much bought all of everything, Swamp Thing and Hellblade, and everything like that. The things that I find strange, Sea Guy was a particularly strange Grant Morrison book that I thought was, again, three issues of like, what was that?
Yeah. I still don't understand anything that happened in Sea Guy.
No, and the good thing was I actually ordered that from somewhere, and I actually got all three issues in one go. So I actually managed to sit down and watch it, or three or four issues, whatever, and spread it all the way through and still just thought, okay. And as Mike has asked me a few times to try and explain exactly what happened in Invisibles at the end, again, whatever, 75 issues of that was just like, yeah, this is good. As you're going through it, you kind of don't really notice that you don't really know what's going on. And when you finishes, job done. That was kind of strange. Yeah. The one book I can think of that was strange and put me off, kind of buying existing stuff, was All-Star Batman, Frank Miller.
Oh, yeah.
because it started, it started off being like, okay, this is kind of potentially the Batman from Dark Knight, but not really, because he's being completely ridiculously stupid. But I think that the thing that I remember saying, right, that's the last issue I buy that, which actually may have even been the last issue they put out, because I don't really remember what happened to it, was the issue where they had the cameo from Wonder Woman come in, and Wonder Woman pushed the guy aside and said, "Get out of the way, sperm donor." And as soon as they did that, I thought, oh my god, Frank, can you not have a strong character that's female without being completely ridiculous with her? And that was it. That was the last time I bought that book. And I think there may have been one or two after that, but I never really missed it. That really bugged the hell out of me, that did. And saying that, I don't think I've read anything Miller's put out for a Woodlawn while, so...
Miller's gone crazy. Like, let's just keep that in perspective. He has completely snapped and lost his mind.
Yeah, I look at All-Star Batman at that panel where he's standing in the room that everything is painted yellow.
Yeah.
Talking to Green Lantern. Like, he even made Robin, like, wear all yellow and, like, painted his face. And I just look at that and my mind boggles. I'm like, what the hell am I looking at?
I mean, that's the thing. Sorry.
No, did you guys get a chance to look at the documentary that just came out about the death of Superman, the movie that they were going to make that with Nicolas Cage and all that fun stuff?
It is on my list.
Okay, well, in it, they do a lot of time interviewing what's-his-name, the producer, who's also the producer on Batman. I can't remember his name right now. It's the guy Kevin Smith talks about, the guy that was Barbra Streisand's hairdresser. Joel Silver, is that his name? No.
That's his name, yes.
Joel Silver, okay, well, anyway. At one point, he's bragging about how that moment when Tim Burton's film, Michael Keaton, picks the bad guy, and he goes, "Who are you?" And he goes, "I'm Batman." He's bragging about how originally he wanted the line to be, "I'm Batman, motherfucker." And the studio wouldn't let him, like, this. The production and Warner Brothers were like, no. Well, Frank Miller seems to think the same way that Joel Silver thinks, right? Which is this mentality of... And I think Walt can probably understand this, being a very physical man in his life. I certainly have spent a lot of time being physical. Guys who talk like that and write like that are guys who want to be physical, who think it's something cool, who think it's powering to have that kind of ability or to... be a physically intimidating human being, because they've been intimidated all their lives, right? So they would think, if they were in those shoes, how would they react? Well, Frank Miller would have, "I'm the goddamn Batman," and Joel Silver, who brags that he's been in 50 fights, a very specific number apparently, and used to put guys in headlocks on set, and I would wish I'd worked on a film with him so he could have done that to me and I could have taught him what a fucking headlock was, is the same way. "I'm Batman, motherfucker." Mm. These are the people who make me hate Batman. You understand? It's not Batman I have a problem with, it's his fans. You know, like, that's the problem I have with Batman, is that they have created this character that just gets weirder and weirder. And before we went on the air, I said, for me, the only weird comic I can think of that's so weird I just stared at it like, what the hell am I reading, was the sequel to Dark Knight Rises. Dark Knight Rises Again, or whatever the hell it's called. Yeah. And I think I had to read that thing three times before I finally understood it. And then after I read it the third time, I kind of got it and was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. But... Frank Miller, Grant Morrison, I'm sure there's Alan Moore. Oh, dear God, Alan Moore. These people are all writing from a place of such mental damage, as near as I can tell, and they're using their writing in comic books to try and sort of explain their universe that they live in, like trying to make, like kind of like Lovecraft used to try and make head nor tail of what he saw around him by creating this fantastic mythos. Except they're doing it with established superhero characters that have identities and have histories and have personalities that they gladly throw out the window to do whatever the hell they want. So I think for me, that's the weird that's bad, is when people are trying to, what normally would be a good writing thing, understand the universe or explore the universe around them through fiction, tend to do it in a very damaging way, kind of like having Sherlock Holmes become a drug addict in the 7% solution and stuff like that. You understand what I'm saying?
Did anyone read the last issue of Swamp Thing that they cut out with the Charles Soule one?
I've never read any Swamp Thing, sadly.
No, I missed that.
Dear God, okay, that's just terrible for starters. Right, okay, but there's a weird bit in that, that it was the rest of the book was kind of, you know, like a standard Swamp Thing story all the way through, and then right in the mid, smack bang in the middle of the issue, which is supposed to be like the very first, last issue with him supposed to defeating another, the Machine Empire versus the Plant Empire, there's a bit in that where He's effectively summoned up by the Lord of Fiction that explains to him that everything is fictional, and it kind of gets all very meta for absolutely no reason whatsoever, and effectively steals like 12 pages out of the center of the book, which could have been resolved like a proper comic book story. And I just, like, when I read that, Charles Saul, I believe. Saul? And the weird thing was, it was like 42 issues of absolutely fantastic stuff, and then that last issue just made me think, well, why did you waste 12 pages on that? you could resolve the story so much better by not having this kind of just wasted, in my opinion, wasted part of it. And you know, and I was really disappointed because at the end of it, it kind of just it ended really well. It just seemed to just be a waste of weirdness for weirdness' sake, effectively,
No, keep going, but I just want to jump in when you're done.
Yeah, I say there was no mention of this kind of like this fictional like entity before that issue at all. It literally just popped up and said, "Oh, by the way, everything's fictional. Don't worry about it. Come back to us when you need to, because we'll always be here." And that was it. And you think, what the hell was that? Where did that come from? That was just so strange.
Okay, now I can draw you a parallel on this type of thing, and I could be wrong, I don't know the guy, but this is what I would suspect is going on. Do you remember, what's his name, rubber-faced comedian Jim Carrey? Uh-huh. Right? We all remember Jim Carrey, right?
Yeah.
Remember when he was the biggest star in the world?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember what happened to him after he became the biggest star in the world? He wanted to be so taken so seriously as an actor, he started doing dramatic roles, which he was not getting praise for. And he swan-dived into a fucking depression out of that and became a very difficult person. No one in Hollywood wanted to work with him for about 5 to 10 years. And now they tried to bring him back, and he does stupid stuff like shit all over Kick-Ass 2 after he shoots it, and basically makes himself persona non grata again, and now he's gone back to being a funny man to try and get some attention back on himself, right? Well, this is what a lot of comedians suffer from, especially those that are in the film industry, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is paralleled by the writers in the comics. They want to be taken seriously as artists, but they don't see the medium that they've succeeded in fame as a serious medium. They don't see superhero comic books as a serious medium. So they're like Stan Lee's whole thing about, I would tell someone I was anything else before I would say I wrote comic books, or, you know, that type of mentality, right? So maybe that's what these guys are doing. Maybe they're trying to show you what great writers they are in a completely inappropriate way. I don't know. That would be my two cents on it.
Well, if I may, okay, I don't enjoy everything that Grant Morrison has put out, but I have to vehemently disagree with most of what's been said about him so far. I love you, Jason, but the last thing that I thought when I read Multiversity was that this is in any way commercial. I don't think anything that meta is playing for the kid that thinks Wolverine is cool.
Well, I sort of figured that he was trying to create platforms for further ongoing series, which was
here's my argument, okay?
The thing
that I loved about Multiversity is it was Grant Morrison showing DC how these characters ought to be written. That's the best use of the Charlton characters, except arguably for Watchmen, if you want to acknowledge that book's origins.
Sure.
That's the best use of the Shazam mythos. I mean, if you want to be commercial at DC, you don't write the best Shazam story that's been written in 70 years. Amen. You make him a hoodie. You make him a hoodie wearing douchebag.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Sing it, Chris.
Yeah. So I admit Grant is hit or miss. I mean, good Lord, Seven Soldiers is the first comic that I've read in 46 years that I had to go to Wikipedia to figure out what the hell just happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank God Wikipedia was there for you.
You know, and I will admit there are parts of Multiversity where I felt like he might have been trying too hard. But here's the thing. I never for one second doubted that that's exactly what Grant Morrison is, that's exactly what he intended, and that's exactly the story that he wanted to write. And
what I said earlier, Chris, about the serious writer thing, I don't put Grant in that category at all.
Oh, good.
Grant Morrison is not... No. He loves the comic book medium. If you've ever read his autobiography, of Gods or Super Gods or whatever the hell it's called. Yeah, he really makes it clear how much he loves superheroes.
Yeah.
Right? So, which is what Grant was Innes doesn't. You can tell Innes hates superheroes, right? You can tell Alan Moore hates superheroes, right?
Yes.
But Grant loves them, and that's the thing. I mean, I still want to know why they had to shoot the president.
Yeah.
Like, I finished Multiversity, and I'm like, well, can I have the rest of this story, please? I want to know what's going on in this conspiracy, and I'm like, no. But, so, you know, hey, man, amen to him. He's a great writer.
Well, again, it's not... It's not perfect. Very few Grant Morrison things are, but good Lord, I'd rather read Multiversity and see some things missing than I would be. DC's current attitude is, and we'll give him a baseball cap and he'll wear it turned around backwards.
Yeah.
because we love Rob Liefeld.
Yeah. So I love Grant. Grant's like family. I love him even when he fails.
Yeah.
So now that we have our tires in the mud a little bit, let's drive back up the hill. So
okay.
we have what we see as weird and what we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
What makes something weird but makes us love it?
Well, I kind of naturally gravitate to weird, although apparently I'm now persona non grata for even suggesting this topic. But
yeah, well, that's true.
Not at all.
I enjoy weirdness, and I always have. I mean, good Lord, I'm Generation X. I learned how to love things ironically before I could walk.
That was a hipster statement. You're fired.
I'm not a hipster. I'm just from a very, very, very...
But you were into weird before. You were into irony before it was cool. We know. We understand, Chris. It's all good. You live in the Pacific Northwest now, don't you? Or at least you work with a company from Seattle, so that makes sense that you have those attitudes.
I asked... my type of weird has gone out of style. I believe me.
What's your type of weird?
I'm into weird old movies. I watch old classroom educational films. You know, okay, there you go. Okay, you know, I'm sort of '90s retro weird.
I agree with you, Chuck, Chris.
I think that that in many cases superhero comics are at their best when they are at their most imaginative. And that means crazy and weird. Before we got here today, I was thinking about how many comics I think are weird. Sometimes it seems like the craziest comic I've ever read is the one I'm reading right now, whatever that book is. And I think that that's when comics are at their best. You know, like, for example, I've never been a big reader of Green Lantern, but this, the idea that, hey, what if there's other lanterns of other colors? What if there's like red,
yeah,
and orange and blue and all? That idea was brilliant to me.
But like, it's not weird.
No, well, to me, it was weird in the sense that it violated what, you know, 50 years of continuity had presumed. And so it blew the boundaries off of the stories and created all of this new universes full of potential story. And I really admire that. I think that's when superhero comics are doing their best, is when they're breaking down presumed borders to create crazy, imaginative new ideas. And to me, that's weird. Good, but weird.
Well, if I may, why don't I talk about my weird comics, and then we can debate whether or not we want to actually post this one or not. Okay. Well, as I said, my idea of weird, you sort of move beyond good or bad. It's just it completely shuts down the logic centers of your brain to a point where you can't even really make a judgment on it. And for me, I had three really, 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 really clear moments of that in my mind. I probably should have looked up the number before I did, but there's an issue of Daredevil. And I'll never forget it in sequence. It comes right after they had a really brief Steve Gerber run, which is always going to stick in your mind, even if you ultimately unsatisfied with it. There's just because nobody wrote like Gerber. But how do you follow up a Steve Gerber book? Well, they had the idea to team Daredevil up with 70s psychic Uri Geller, the famous guy who bends spoons with his mind. So, putting aside for the fact that he's a fraud, okay, I mean, in the 70s, you could actually, it was easier to con people into believing that you could bend spoons with your mind. Okay, what at Marvel made them think this was a good idea? I mean, even if the guy weren't bullshitting us, he bends spoons with his mind. That's not even going to get you in the Legion of Superheroes. So right away, you're questioning who thought this was a good idea, and you're pitying the poor writer that has to make something of, and he totally bends spoons with his mind. Does he do anything else? Yeah, if you give him an old watch, he can make it run again. Okay. You know, you don't really see Bullseye shaking in his boots. Bullseye's getting ready to chuck a spoon at Daredevil, and, you know, Yuri Geller magically bends it but makes it non-lethal. I mean, how do you write this story? So just the very, 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 very idea behind that, that to me is a weird comic. Secondly, my second one was Marvel published a short-run series back in the late 70s, that just seems to be the era for it, called The Human Fly. Now, if you're really into Spider-Man, you may be thinking about the guy that got turned into a fly, blah, 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 blah. No.
I owned all copies of The Human Fly.
I love you, Jason. I can't say that enough. Okay. The Human Fly was the golden age of the stuntman. And this guy came along because a guy who owned a Canadian pepperoni factory figured that they could get any down on his luck person, stuff them inside this red suit, put them in these incredibly dangerous, stupid stunts, and if he gets killed, well, you just stick another guy in the suit, and who knows, right? And, you know, I the more that I found out about it, the more I like, and again, who at Marvel thought that, well, okay, this Canadian sausage king is murdering, you know, like hobos and like down on their luck types for the sake of entertainment.
Stop. My buddy Jeff Ranger has one of the best comments I ever heard about Canadians in the Marvel Universe. He says we're like the Romulans in TNG. We're always doing something hidden out in the wilderness somewhere, and it's all nefarious, and you won't find out what it is. But then when it comes to light, it's all, ooh, Canada! Fuck, man. Given the amount of Canadians who worked for Marvel over the years, is this obsession they have with us being fucking bizarre wilderness villains?
Place the Human Fly into a little bit more context, which I know makes it much less funny. This is the era of Evel Knievel.
Yes, very much so.
Stuntmen were kind of super heroic. I mean, you were jumping across the Grand Canyon in a rocket and stuff. And their costumes had capes, and they had symbols, and it was very super heroic, you know? And the Human Fly wore this red and white outfit like you described, and he had a cane and a little short half cape, like Evel Knievel or like Elvis Presley on stage. And I didn't know anything about the Canadian Sausage King. Yes. All I knew was in the comic, because I was reading this comic as it was coming out, you know, when I was like 10 or something, or 6, and he climbed around on airplanes and stuff.
Aid, how about it? Some favorite weird comics?
I'm really struggling, man. I cannot honestly think of anything that's. I mean, I can think of.
Go for it.
Okay. I'm thinking now, so you carry on.
Okay. All right. Well, let me get my last one out of the way here, and then we'll get all that game. But until I can think of something else, the weirdest comic I've ever read is from the original run of Justice League of America, JLA number 89, just to show that I'm not just going to pick on Marvel today. It was during the Mike Friedrich run on that book. And this comic is just, if you've ever read it, you never forget it. It's just all kinds of weird. Because it's basically a story about Harlan Ellison meeting the Justice League and falling in love with Black Canary, but never having the courage to tell her. And then it gets weird. You see, because to kind of avoid getting sued by Harlan, and because really seriously, I think you know, if you're in a crowd of 10 people, odds are at least one of them has been sued by Harlan Ellison. He comes up with the very clever, you'll never guess who this is, alter ego of Harlequin Ellis. Because who could that be, right? Yeah. And the thing is, most of it is told from Harlequin Ellison. It's told in like second, like third person narration, and it's all about cheer up, Harlequin. Love will find you. And you know, and every now and again, you know, like Batman will pop in. And so you're just left with so many questions. Why Harlan Ellison? Why do we care whether or not he finds love? What does Batman have to do with any of this? And the more that I've researched this comic, the weirder that it gets, because I figure maybe Friedrich was friends with Ellison and maybe was sending him like a little cheer-up thing, because Ellison is obviously a big comic book fan. And I actually tracked down an interview with Friedrich. He met him once briefly. And apparently got this whole having a crush on Black Canary story out of that. And it's just 20 odd pages of Hostess fruit pie ads and WTF. You really have to read it to get the full experience of it, but that's the best that I can describe it in words.
Interestingly, this is almost certainly influenced by Harlan Ellison's famous science fiction short story, Repent, Harlequin, Said the TikTok Man. In that story, that's where Harlequin Ellis is a pseudonym for Harlan Ellison, but Harlan Ellison wrote a story starring a character named Harlequin, which came out in 1965. And I don't know the date for your Justice League story, but my hunch is that it would fit.
Yeah. Yeah, and the one question the other question I've ever been able to solve is, why write something that's just likely to piss Ellison off? why do you want to do that? I've seen angry Harlan Ellison. There's just some things in life it's just not worth bringing on yourself. So I don't know. Mike Friedrich may be in the witness protection program now, for all I know. You know, Harlan may still be gunning for him because Harlan does not forget. But there you go. That until Grant Morrison comes up with something else, the weirdest comic I've ever read.
Sorry, guys. Hear me now.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, there we go. My mic turned off for some damn reason. Chris, you've now given me something I want to put on my tombstone. Thank you.
Oh, I did?
Yeah. Andrew Collis, blah, blah, blah. You know, if I have kids by then, you know, loved father, loving husband. And what does Batman have to do with this?
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
That's going on my gravestone, motherfuckers. And to your question of why would you want to piss Harlan Ellison off? Because he's there. He's like a mountain. You got to climb him, man. Come on. You want to be held in the same esteem as Gene Roddenberry, don't you? Come on.
I went up and asked for his autograph once, and he threatened to murder the guy in line in front of me, and he looked at me and said, "What do you want?" And I almost said, "I'm not so sure anymore."
Jesus Christ. He's an angry little midget. Come on, let's be honest. He's a little trouble.
Well, to be fair, the guy deserved it.
Well, I'm sure he did, but I've seen enough interviews with Harlan Ellison and read enough of his articles. It's not like he's a warm, snuggly person either, so let's be honest. You know, arriving at that conversation a few minutes late, who knows what Harlan said to him before it started, right? But the point is, we're going to get sued now anyway. We're going to get sued anyway because we've mentioned Harlan Ellison on the air. So I'm doubling down and saying every mean thing I can about Harlan Ellison, including, by the way, City on the Edge of Forever is not that great, and it's not the best Star Trek episode. I'm sorry, it just isn't, and that's what I'm going to say.
It's pretty cool.
It's good. No, it's a good episode, but it's not the best. Come on, Space Seed's the best. We all know that. Watch it again, Abe. Watch it again and pay attention to Ricardo Montalban. It's the best acting he's ever done in his life.
Okay, I'm going to disagree. I'm going to say, this is an offshoot of this, I'm going to say it is Mudd's Women, I'm afraid. So.
Oh! Harcourt! Oh, my God.
Come on, that's genius.
That's pretty good. Okay, so weird comics. Go back and read the Gold Key Star Trek comics.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
It's like, did they even get to watch Star Trek before they started writing those? Like, it's ridiculous, man.
You know, the number of times Kirk's and Spock's solution is, well, let's just blow up the planet.
Exactly. And be sure when we go to warp speed, we have fire coming out of the back of our warp nacelles, because that's important in our rocket ship through the stars.
So is weird comics just something that makes us raise our eyebrows, or is it something that takes an existing premise and kind of turns it sideways, like Why the Last Man? Or something like Sandman or Sin City. I mean,
again, my definition, it would really depend. If it's just new, fresh, and original, that's good. Weird, again, it's almost Nietzschean. It's beyond good and evil. It's just something that you just simply don't know how to react to.
Would that be something like when Marvel was struggling? Before they re-kidnapped all the image writers back, they put out Cap Wolf.
Cap Wolf would be up there, I think, at least for me.
Like Teenage Stone Age Stark.
Yeah, or the Bug Jan, right?
Bug Jan. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But listen, weirdness for the sake of weirdness isn't good. Okay, I'm going to say that right now, from my point of view anyway, for me. Anything that's just weird for the sake of being weird, well, that's nice and that's great. Why don't you go sit in a room and talk to yourself for an hour or two? The rest of us would like some context and understanding, hopefully, that we can get what's going on, right? But if it's done well, the way Grant Morrison does it, you might not see the context, you may not understand the context, but you're pretty sure there is a damn context there, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely. I think you're absolutely right there. I mean, I come from a film studies background as well, and one of the things that I always say to people is, you can't set out to make a cult movie.
No, God, never.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that has to happen.
Listen, I guarantee you, Paul Verhoeven was dead serious when he made RoboCop. Every moment in that film was on paper was 100% legit serious, and then the audience saw it and started laughing their asses off at the absurdity of it all, and he went, I meant to do that, right? So there you go.
Yeah, there's got to be at least one person working on that film who believes that it's a good movie and is saying something. That's, you got, like, it's the difference between Birdemic and Birdemic 2.
Manos, the hands of fate.
There you go.
Okay. Pretty much sums it up. Okay, comics. Go. Let's stick to comics, though, because we're going to get off on film, and I can do that for 5 hours. weird comics. I don't know, man. Like, I got to say, either I've been lucky, and I've avoided the weird comics for the most part, or they were just so goddamn weird, my mind has erased them in favor of keeping things like shoelace tying as an important skill, because I can't think of any off the top of my head. Now, stuff like The Elseworlds, that was awesome. When they would go out and do weird sort of reinterpretations and stuff, that was always
kind of them. Some of them.
That first batch of annuals, though, that first year they did it, where they had, like, the Legion of Superheroes as Star Wars and stuff like that. That stuff was interesting.
Some of it, yeah.
Now, what about stuff, now, Andrew has gone on record before as saying he's definitely not a fan, but what about stuff like Saga, where the, you have a very traditional space opera story, but you have guys with TV heads and talking assassin cats and stuff
and
like that.
Dead teenage babysitters and Jesus, I hate that comic.
But is that weird for the sake of being weird, or is that just somebody who wanted to defy what normal science fiction could look like?
Do they have to be mutually exclusive?
No, that's true. That's definitely true.
All right, because I could see it being a bit of column A and a bit of column B there for sure. Like, the TV head things was weird for the sake of being weird. That's just obvious, you know? That's someone who probably grew up on a lot of heavy metal magazine back in the 70s and 80s, seeing the absurdity.
You know? There's a lot of European sci-fi in there, so a lot of Barbarella, that kind of style stuff.
Yeah, there you go. Aiden knows. Oh, God, wait, Walt, Aiden and I just agreed on something. Oh, no.
This is where the plot comes in.
Buy a lotto ticket or buy a survival kit, because either you're about to win or the world's going to end.
But, like, you know, then you have other comics, like when they did Secret Avengers, and, you know, this is going back to some of the writers that we were talking about earlier, and you have MODOK, you know, characters like MODOK, which is just on their face, just, yeah, okay, somebody was smoking something. But, you know, they decided the artist and the writer was collaborating on that book. And one of the things that the artist put in the background is he put in a mouse with a needle, and they wrote him in as one of MODOK's assassins. I mean, it's ludicrous and funny on its face, but when you read the story, it was hysterically fun and interesting.
I haven't read that one.
Yeah, it's all going on before the Secret Convergence tie-in on Infinite Garbage, and they
of the multiverse.
Yeah,
sorry, I'm still loving Secret Wars. I'm sorry, I think it's great.
really, you're liking Secret Wars? Really?
I am liking Secret Wars. The core Secret Wars book is really good.
Which book?
The actual core book, the actual main Secret Wars miniseries is really, really good.
Okay. Hmm.
The only one that really interested me was the Death Race one with all the Ghost Riders.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but like, in Secret Avengers, you know, they got all these, you know, it's basically the Avengers misfits that they're trying to keep out of the news media, so they keep sending them on these secret missions. And, They managed to convince MODOK to work for them, and he just comes up with the craziest crap. But the artist that's doing all of the, all of his stuff is he's just putting all this weird shit in the background, and then the writer is sitting there going, "Oh yeah, there's that assassin mouse, and there's these bug drones, and you know." So I mean, it's all this weird stuff that's coming out of the mind of the artist, but the writer is actually taking it and running with it and making it effective in the story, so that you have to go back and say, because it was in the art at some point previous, and then the writer wrote it in later. So you have to go back and look at it to find where the origin of that is. You know,
okay. Going along the lines with MODOK. See, I like MODOK. MODOK was cool. I'm not happy with his I'm trying to think of the word. I'm thinking of the general kind of downplaying of his coolness. They make him a laughing stock. Don't like that. Like, what's the general consensus then with everybody about Deadpool? Because Deadpool books is like, oh, they're so funny. Oh, that's like, I cannot stand Deadpool. Any book with Deadpool in would instantly mean me. I will not buy that issue. I hate the guy, and I think it's just because I find it is so kind of easy to basically go, look at us. We've been really kooky. Ha ha ha. No, you're not. You're just being shitting annoying. Sorry.
That's pretty much how I feel about Alan Moore. So there we go.
I'm with Aid on the Deadpool thing.
I can't stand him. The only good thing about the Deadpool movie is the costume is spot on, and that is particularly well done. Apart from that, I have no interest whatsoever.
Ryan Reynolds is a damn good choice for Deadpool, but I agree with you. In comics, Deadpool annoys the crap out of me. But the moment I saw that little preview trailer they did, Hola, mi amo es Piscina de la Muerta, I died laughing. I'm like, okay, this seems like it's going to be funny, but it needs to serve that purpose. You can't have Deadpool in the regular Marvel Universe, the 616,
because
makes mockery of it all.
And I think that's the problem. It's just that kind of thing. The entire thing where he just butts up against the regular stuff. I mean, the Deadpool Secret Wars crossover, which has got Deadpool appearing in Secret Wars like the original 80s version. I just think, why the hell are you doing this? You're kind of just ripping the piss out of your own book that people actually love. I don't get this. This makes no sense to me.
But hang on, Aid. Look at it this way. Look at it from a film point of view, even from comic books. I love the movie Mystery Men, and I love the animated and the live-action Tick series. And the reason I love them, but I hate Garth Ennis's The Boys, is because those things, Tick and Mystery Men, love superheroes. And you can see that they're taking the piss out of them, for sure, but they're doing it from a point of love and respect and honoring the traditions and making fun of the tropes and what have you, where basically something like The Boys is just shitting all over superheroes as retarded and stupid. Well, this is so dumb. I don't think Deadpool's doing that. I think what Deadpool's doing is failing, mind you, but trying to be, I don't know, a Greek chorus, maybe? Trying to be that fly on the wall. I don't know, but it doesn't work in the comics. I agree with you on that.
You know, my whole reaction to Deadpool has always been, up to this point, I've always thought one of the saddest things in comics is when DC rips off something from Marvel, and it's just inherently going to be sad and tragic and terrible. But yeah. Deadpool, to me, is the moment when somebody at Marvel said, all right, let's mix Ambush Bug and Lobo. That'll be cool. And, like, I may have to revise things. You know, Marvel ripping off DC may actually be even sadder than DC ripping off Marvel.
But isn't that what they're doing right now with both of their crossovers that is running? I mean, it just seems like the same story running in two different camps.
Convergence is gone now.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, really, Secret Wars is like Flashpoint in the fact that it's entirely disposable. It really doesn't matter what happens during it. It's what happens after it.
Yes.
All the changes that Marvel has let slip are going to be happening after Secret Wars. They sound like they could be fresh and fun, even if you know none of them are going to take over the long haul. DC's changes are just—they just keep getting more and more depressing. They tried bringing back, you know, Image and mid-90s Marvel because apparently somebody wanted that back, and that didn't work. And now they had this accidental hit with Batgirl, and now everything has to be Batgirl. And now I'm having to suffer through Hal Jordan as a hoodie-wearing loner. You know, I mean, the whitest white guy in the history of whiteness is going around being a badass hoodie-wearing outlaw, and I don't know whether to laugh or cry. And really, really, I'll just end it with two words: Bat Bunny.
Bat what? Bat Hood?
Bat Bunny.
Bat Bunny.
You haven't seen the Commissioner Gordon Batman?
No, no, no.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, I did something for my sanity a few years ago. I stopped reading Marvel and DC comics. I just gave up. I wait for people to tell me something's good, and then I go download it and see if it's good. Hawkeye?
Okay,
very good. Spider-Gwen? Good start. Let's see where they go with it. Everything else? Shit. Ever since the Bendis era, ever since Avengers Disassembled, and ever since Flashpoint, I have just checked out of both of those lines of work.
Okay, I'm gonna say something now. Right, for starters, Gotham Academy, bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
Got the trade last week. Is a fantastic. I'll just say that now.
What's it about?
It's about kids in school in Gotham. Simple as that. And it's Harry kind Potter of like Batman. Got cross. Yeah, Harry Potter Batman. Yeah, effectively is what it is. Crossover with Batman, the Batman mythos, but not actually really featuring anybody really linked to it. It's excellent, and the artwork is absolutely astounding. I will say that. I think DC now, that their take on their core heroes, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, where they've kind of like, yeah, let's change them for the sake of changing them, is a bit stupid. I don't understand why they're doing that, because it's like, let's make it everything that people remember about him, but so when we've got these movies coming out, and now people aren't going to even recognize those guys. But since the last Comic-Cons, was it San Diego that was last week or this week,
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah.
They have announced a lot more diverse books that seem to be like, let's just publish books that are like Elseworlds, like Multiversity, like the Batman Black and White that Morrison's writing, with kind of like, hey, this is a take on a character on Batman you've never seen before, without having to worry about it being in continuity. I like that. I think that's really cool. And I think we're going to get there's going to be some interesting stories and interesting books that aren't kind of like too worried about being constrained. It's the books that in the continuity, but kind of just basically flaunting, say, like the Hitch's Justice League, which is a really nice book, except for the fact that for some reason it costs $7. I have no idea why. But it's that there's no continuity to it. But with the core Justice League book, it seems to be like this is a cool story, but it's got no reason to actually tie into anything. It's the kind of the things they acknowledge are outside the universe that are actually being quite interesting.
So with all of this strange stuff going on, and the fact that we have weird that is influencing comics, but also, trying to make comics something that would bring people back again, can we see the same kind of weird in a superhero RPG supplement that has a coffin as the main set piece for one of the villains? Can you talk a little bit about that, Chris, in Rogues Gallery?
Well, for better or for worse, I have good people who usually talk me out of my genuinely weird ideas. God bless them for it, because when I give my weirdness full reign, I wind up writing noir and I wind up having to be off the internet for 2 or 3 years.
Once again, that was a great book.
I know. I've told him this before as well. He just doesn't listen.
I love you guys very much, and I appreciate that. But I just, the months and months of people talking about unrelated RPG topics, and then just a minute they'd show me go like, oh, by the way, you know that Eminem noir book is shit. Like, what? You know, to hear something that I sweat, that I poured so much love in, discussed in the same terms that people reserve for Bill Cosby and like people that have committed like crimes. No. But anyway.
So how has Rogues Gallery been received so far?
So far, it's been tremendous. Once we got the people that are boycotting over Cosmic Handbook, once they had their say, and I think people actually took a look at it, I think they've been really, 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 really happy with it. And one of the villains that I was most proud of, Osprey, the one that came out last week, I went over our forums to check on that. And it was just so gratifying, because not only did people immediately get what I was after with the villain, there's was just all these threads basically saying, like, I can't wait to kick this guy's ass. And I'm like, success! I mean, what better thing, what better validation can you have that you've made a good villain is that people want to put him in their game just so they can beat the living crap out of him.
It's like nice. Joffrey in Game of Thrones. You just want to give him a slap.
Yeah,
but once he's gone, you're going to miss him. You're going to miss
that
villain.
Oh, no, tell me about it. Because,
yeah, that's... I didn't meet Joffrey in the book anywhere near as much as I did on the TV show, because that kid did it perfectly, but I knew
he did.
He'd be gone soon.
That guy's
when he's
genius.
Gone, we got nothing left. We got what, Rose Bolton? Ooh, I could give a crap about the Boltons. And it's true. Look at what the show's done. It's falling apart. Hey, just saying. Okay, so hang on. Chris.
Yes, sir.
Noir was amazing.
Okay? Oh, God bless you. Thank you.
No. Shut up and listen before you start praising me, okay? It was amazing because it was the closest I think anyone's going to come to setting me up with what I want. I won't even write it. I'm so scared of it. A diesel punk superhero setting, okay? I'm desperate for one. I hate steampunk. I can't stand steampunk. And I know everybody up there in Seattle working around Green Ronin and all that loves steampunk, trust me. Too many of them are on my Facebook feed for me not to see the love of the steampunk going on up there. But I like diesel punk, right? One of the quotes I use in one of my email things is, steampunks dress like Russian nobility, and diesel punks dress like the people coming to kill them. And I kind of love that analogy because it does really work for me. I'm big into Tesla. I love Atomic Robo because of it gets into a little bit of the diesel punk stuff every now and then. And I love that kind of shit. So noir was as close to that as I was ever going to get. So I'm going to ask you, as one man to another, one fan to another, one professional to another, just please bring me back to M&M. I will give the game a second try. I promise I will. If you guys could make a diesel punk setting, please. Because everything you guys write, I just go, and I just have no interest in it because it's not my kind of stuff, right? And then this noir came out, and I was like, oh, and it was a good read, man. You did a good job. I understand people shitting on it. People are shitting on it. Send them to see me, man. I'm 6'3". I'll sort them right the fuck out.
Thank you very much for saying nice things about noir. That's always appreciated. I think we're doing good stuff with M&M, but I guess for like noir, it's just not going to be to everyone's taste. There has been some discussion about doing some fresh new settings, but It's just so much work and so much commitment. Not an easy thing to do, and not something to be done lightly. I hope that talk will lead somewhere. And I'm kind of doing my own setting thing with another company, which I don't really think counts much as diesel punk, but it's ground to be explored. And you know, M&M is an open system. You know, it's certainly always been very welcoming of people that have different visions they want to pursue.
Yeah, no. I know Walnut have plans. We have the stats for it, and we have plans to bring Zenith stuff over and do M&M versions of it as well. I just don't play M&M. That's my problem. But the thing is, for me, is you guys are the 800-pound gorilla. You know, like that's when it comes to superhero role playing, you're it. You're the boss. Icons is number two, but you are number one. That's for sure. You guys can set trends. You guys can set styles. You guys can do a lot of things. You are almost in the superhero role playing community for me. And this is just for me as a person who doesn't play M&M but loves reading your source material. You guys are almost have the power TSR had over fantasy in the early late 80s, early 90s. You know what I mean? Where you were dictating the trends. That's a tremendous amount of power to have, for good or for evil. It's a very tremendous amount of power, right?
Well, I thank you very much. I mean, I've always been proud of the work that we've done, and glad that people responded to it as well as they have. But I'm just happy they let me in the door. Honestly,
can we give you free coffee when you get there?
Well, I just get to sit around the booth and listen to Chris Premis and Steve Kenson talk about game design, and I feel like I'm getting a master class for no charge.
Right. Right.
You know, and you know, I mean, even if they just keep me around to take bullets for Kenson, I'm just so happy to be with around such talented folks that have been very, very supportive of the things that I've wanted to do. I mean, I could count on one hand the number of times they've said no to something that I wanted to do, and most of the times they've been proven right in the end. So I just feel so grateful to be with that company.
So with that coming up, what do we have on the horizon? What can you give us a little hint on what characters are next?
Well, now I can't speak to what the other writers are doing except Aid, because Aid has been kind enough to share the stuff that he's working on. For the most part, other people have just been popping up and like saying, "Hey, I'm working on Rogues Gallery," and I'm like, "Really? Hi, nice to meet you." Like the awesome Alex Thomas, who I finally got to meet. I had no idea he was working on the project till they posted his villain team. I'm like, "Oh, hello." And I forgot to mention him on a previous podcast, so let me give a shout-out to Alex and how awesome his stuff is. But at least as far as the stuff that I have done, the next thing that I have in the hopper is I updated a villain from my Silver Age adventure, The Deadly Day of the Dread Destructus. That's when I was really in my Stan Lee period. I updated one of the villains that I originally created in honor of World of Darkness author Jess Hartley. So I updated a villain I based on her and brought her into the modern age. And I just kind of took the same power set and put what I hope will be a creepier, scarier variation on what somebody with that power could actually do. So, and plus, you know, Alchemistress. That may be that and Chimpanzoom may be the two best names I've ever come up with.
Chimpanzoom, yeah. Chris. Okay, Chris. I've got to tell you this because I've never mentioned this before. Because every time we get around to Time of Crisis, I forget to tell you this. Iron Mandrill should have been his first name. Come on, man. Every time I see it, I think, Iron Mandrill, that's just so cool. But sorry, you have to excuse me.
Well, I mean, Iron Monkey was in the theaters at the time, so I felt like I had to use that. And I'm probably already going to hell for Nick Furry and his Howler Monkey Commandos.
Oh. Yeah, but Chimpanzee is just genius. I absolutely love Chimpanzee. That is just so cool.
Thank you.
So speaking of the hellish stuff,
Chris, I take it back right now. It's all taken back.
Okay, I deserve that. I deserve that.
Speaking of the hellish side of role-playing games, we just heard that we saw this excellent cover on Facebook the other day where there were a bunch of X's over some supervillains. Jason, do you want to give us a quick blurb about that?
So I hit a very important threshold yesterday. Those of you that have been following this Supervillain Handbook, you know that we did a basic edition. And for the basic edition, we had about 30 villains on the cover. Aid, you did the layout for this book, so you know exactly what
I'm talking about. I did. I'm going to try and think how many there were. 30, yeah, I think that sounds
right. As I was making up all of those characters, I personally would X out their faces so it looked like the Days of Future Past cover. So then it was my way of sort of motivating myself, because there's a lot of bad guys, you know, there's a lot. And so there's 40 villains plus that actually grew because one of them is a team. There's the girlfriend's gone bad turned into two villains, Bark and Bite. yeah, I know it's corny, but what the hell. And then there's a villainous organization that Jacob Blackman invented for us called Nest. And so I made up a few different versions of their specialized agents. So you've got, you know, the Beetle Trooper and the Wasp agent and so on. So that added to the list, and then we added 7 heroes to the list, and that turned into 8, because when I wrote up the Danner family, I had to write up at least 2 members of that family. So it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But yesterday, I crossed off the last one. Joe Singleton had drawn the Puzzler. Now, the Puzzler is such a kind of archetypal name, I struggled really hard to come up with an interesting take on the villain. But I finally got it. It hit me yesterday morning, and I was like, holy shit, I got to write that. So I wrote up the Puzzler and Apocrypha, who is one of our ultimate villains. She's the woman who is queen of all of the alternate dimensions that have been destroyed. Like, whenever someone creates an alternate timeline, and then the Watcher comes in and obliterates it or something, she steals a piece of it. And they make this patchwork kind of battle world out of it. And so she's a cosmic level villain. So we finished all of the write-ups that I have art for. That leaves 12 characters still to do, all of which will be done by Dionysia Jones, who did a few pieces for us already. She did the Dracula piece and the Woman in Red and a few others. So it's coming along very well. I'm very happy with it. I still have to go back and do some revision and editing, but 39 characters down, 12 to go.
Excellent. So we're coming up on the 5-minute warning before my carriage turns into a pumpkin. So final shots on weird comics. Aid, go.
That's good. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I like them. I like stuff that makes me think. I don't like stuff that is, say, like we mentioned before, weird for weird's sake. It just seems to be a bit crazy because there's no narrative there. That's cool. That's good. What I mentioned before is, I read a lot of manga as well. Manga is just like, what the hell was that about? that's quite interesting as well. When you just go, well, yeah. All good. But sorry.
So I feel every time I look at Attack on Titan. Yeah, okay, that's well, a thing. Yeah.
Attack on Titan. I watched the first episode the other day. And nearly fell asleep because I thought, what the hell? Anyway, but yeah. Anything Morrison puts out, fantastic. But it may take a couple of reads to go through.
Andrew.
Yeah?
Final shot.
Final shot. Comics should be good. That's one of the best blogs I've ever read, and they cover usually what I think about comics, so go read them if you want my opinions. No. look, weird for the sake of weird is pointless. It's pointless in film. It's pointless in art. It's pointless. It's masturbatory. It's self-expressionist. It's go do it in a dark room. If you want other people to look at it, have a reason and have a point. Give me a reason and a point to come look at your stuff. Give me a reason to take the time. Give me a reason to spend my money. Don't just take my money and then go, well, you didn't get it because you don't understand my perspective on the world. You know what? Grant Morrison does that to me all the time, and at least I enjoy what I'm reading when I do it, okay? So if you can't be at least as responsible to your readers as Grant Morrison, with all due respect from the Great White North, fuck off. Quit wasting my time.
Jason, final thoughts.
Mogobi Desert Rats, 70 cents. the next time that you're struggling because you don't think you're going to make it, Mogobi Desert Rats will guide you to the light.
Can I get copies of Adolescent Atomic Aardvarks, whatever that one was with it as well?
Or Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters.
No, yep. I make no
Yeah,
problem.
Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters, yes, that's what I remember.
Chris, parting thoughts.
Well, I have to admit, when I first pitched this idea, I was feeling sort of sad, thinking that maybe the grand old days of weird comics were long behind us, that we had been destined to a bunch of mega crossover, homogenized corporate crap. At least I figure, at this point, the only place you're going to get a weird comic is to go off to some dark corner of Artist Alley and find the creepiest guy sitting there who's getting no action at his table or something like that. But there are every now and again there are some reminders that I think even the big two aren't done with weird comics. And I think the best example of that probably has to be when long after Occupy Anything became irrelevant, all of a sudden AOL Time Warner decides to resurrect a classic weird idea, the Green Team, and marry it with another comic called The Movement, blatantly selling it as the 1% comic and the 99% comic long after those had become cliche and meaningless. And just the simple notion of, oh, AOL Time Warner is going to tell me what it's like to be part of the Occupy movement. Ooh, this should be fun. Oh, and they're going to tell me what it's like to be a benevolent group of billionaires. Oh man. So I expected the comic. I knew both those comics had a chance to be really, 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 really bad. But just really, they were just so clueless. They happily crossed over into weird territory. And apparently even DC acknowledged it. I think they canceled the trade paperback collections of both.
I was just going to say, I think Green Team was the first trade paperback that never collected the series, yeah.
Yeah, right. And you know somebody is going to be paying 70 cents a pop for all the issues of Green Team and the Movement someday down the line. So yeah, it does my heart good to know that the same things that produced all the great weird comics of yesterday, they're still there. Maybe not as much as we would like, but, there's still the possibility to just give you something that shuts off your logic centers.
Nice.
Thank you.
That along with, what was it, Gobi Rats?
Mogobi Desert Rats.
Mogobi Desert Rats, there we go.
I can't find it on Google. Send me a link.
I will.
And on that note, I'm Walt, and thank you very much to the panel for coming out today, and thank you to Mike Lafferty, who is my Steve Kenson and keeps letting me play in his sandbox. And with that, we're out.